Manny.
All of the Yom Tovim, all the holidays in Klal Yisrael, the mitzvahs that we perform on the Yom Tov, whether they were given in the Torah or Hanukkah and Purim, which were rabbinic degrees, the mitzvahs were all designed in the spiritual way to give the sense of, not the sense, but the holiness of that yontif comes through the mitzvahs. So that we re-experience leaving Mitzrayim when we sit at the Seder and drink the four cups and eat matzah. And we re-experience Sukkos when we sit in the Sukkah and we take the luluf. And even by Chanukah and Purim, Ramchal says that when we light candles on Chanukah, we relive, on a lower level of course, but the spiritual strength of what Chanukah was. And on Purim, when we do the mitzvahs of Purim, we relive the miracle of Purim as well. Having said that, it leads us to a very fascinating thing. And that is that the only holiday that has in its mitzvos commandments that are between man and his fellow man is only on Purim, no other holiday. The Torah is full of mitzvahs between man and man and man and God. The first tablet was Binyan L'Makom, between God and man, and the second tablet was between man and man. But on holidays, in Yom Tovim, the only yontif that has mitzvahs which are between man and man is only Purim. This is the Maral's observation. An interesting observation. Rosh Hashanah, you blow a shofar, right? That's between man and God. Yom Kippur, you fast. In Sukkot, you take a little of an esrog, sit in the sukkah. In Chanukah, you light candles. In Pesach, you eat matzah. You don't eat chametz. But on Purim, you do both. You read the Megillah, and you have mitzvahs which are between man and man, like giving to the poor as part of the mitzvah of the day, right? And sending shalchmanas to people, which doesn't exist as part of the essence of a holiday in any other holiday except for Purim. There's got to be a reason why that's true. What's the reason? It's a great observation. What's the reason? So the Maral says that the strength of the Jews to merit the reward of being saved at the time of Mordechai and Esther was Nikohalu HaYehudim Lamod HaNafshem. The Jews joined together. They did tshuva together, and that was the power that Hashem allowed this enormous nace, this enormous miracle to take place. So therefore, in fact, when Haman came to Achashverosh and complained about the Jews, he said, Yeshno am echad mefozer mefore ben ha'amim. There's a scattered nation here. Right? They're not together with us. And Jews' success has always been that we interact with the non-Jews, but we stay strong as our own self. And now that the Jews took part in Achashverosh's feast, So the tshuva they did wasn't just that they fasted and they davened Hashem, but Nikahalu HaYehudim, the Jews became a group. They did it together. It was the togetherness of Purim that helped foster this special miracle. Hence, now that we want to relive the Nes of Purim, the miracle of Purim, how do we relive it? By having mitzvahs as part of the holiday itself, which is between man and man. So therefore we have the mitzvah of giving to the poor, the mitzvah of Shalach Manas, of giving to our friends gifts, unity, Jewish unity, to replicate the unity that took place at that time, and through that merit, the schus, the merit of being saved. It goes even deeper. There is, there are three cardinal sins in the Torah. These three cardinal sins are the only sins that a person has to give up his life for, even in private. This is a well-known law. If a person tells you, kill somebody else or I'll kill you, you have to say, kill me. A person says, a guy says, go worship an idol, you have to say, kill me. If he says, go commit adultery, or any sexual act that's forbidden, you have to say, kill me first. Why these three mitzvahs? What is unique about these three? In fact, the only one that has the hardest punishment of skila, which is the worst of the four deaths that can be given, the only one that gets that punishment is only for worshipping idols, not for the other ones. Morale said something very deep. In fact, I was talking to Dr. David Pelkowitz, a renowned psychologist, and he told me that morale was 300 years ahead of psychology by saying this insight. Listen to a deep insight. Said there's three types of mitzvos. There's mitzvos between man and God, there's mitzvos between man and man, and there's mitzvos between a person and himself for his own self-growth. So Morale says the following deep thought. I'm going to show you how it's Purim related, besides that it's an interesting idea. The worst, the antithesis of not serving God is to worship idols. The worst thing a person could do in terms of hurting his fellow man is to kill somebody. And the most self-destructive thing in life are people that are sexually deviant and that try to live outside of marriage. The Torah understands that we have these needs, and the Torah gives us a way to use these needs. And when people are involved in promiscuous behavior where it's not according to the Torah, they are the most self-destructive people, because that is the absolute in selfishness. So it's the most self-destructive. And we see it today. You can look at all these Hollywood types that can't stay married for more than 2 months, right? And they're miserable people because they're in it to be takers, not givers. If it's not a relationship that you're committed to, if it's not a long-term relationship, we have responsibility, right? Then they're just takers. Takers are selfish. Givers are selfless. Givers feel a sense of importance because God created the world because he wanted to give us good. It's our job to come to this world and give good, right? But But when a person is promiscuous, he's really a taker. So it's self-destructive. So I'm going to show you how, even on Purim, besides that Purim has in it a concept of, it has all the concepts, because reading the Megillah is stating publicly that God has a plan, and he worked out a system where the Jews could be saved without any miracles happening, right? It wasn't like the Red Sea split. It was just that Hashem made it, that Esther was in the right place at the right time, and that she was able to counteract Haman and save the Jews, right? All within nature, but all with God's hand. So that's the Benam Lamakum. That's between God and man reading the Megillah. And then when you give presents to poor people and presents to friends, that's the between man and himself. A man himself is the idea of a man and his fellow friend is becoming one, becoming part of a group. You're here as a group. That's a power. There's a power in a group when we're together.
Yeah.
That's a power in a group when you're together. Correct? So when there's a power of a group. And then there is the third aspect, which is between man and himself. And that has to do with the deeper meaning of the mitzvah of drinking on Purim too. Right? We're not getting into the details now. There are people that just drink a little bit more. There are people who get plastered. You know, I haven't gotten plastered in 42 years because my wife doesn't like it, but until I got married, I enjoyed it immensely. but the deeper meaning of the person drinking, in a deeper meaning, I don't mean in a frivolous way, I'm not talking about Mardi Gras, I'm talking about something spiritual, right? The deeper meaning is for the person to access his own essence, to know what I really stand for, what's really the deepest part of me. That's the deeper meaning of a person that will drink to get down, to take off the outside things, to get to the true essence of the person. Not being frivolous, not just partying, but to get to Ben Om Atzmo, to the person's own self. And I'm going to read you an extra word in the Rambam. We study Talmud and Rambam, and we know, we're trained that every word means something. So there's a very famous halacha. The Rambam says a halacha that it's better to give presents on Purim than to make a fancier meal. And even it's better to give more to the poor even than giving shalach manos to friends. Right? And then the Rambam says, why is that true? Why is it important? Why should it be a cardinal thing for people to help the poor on Purim? The Rambam says, she'ein sum simcha gedolim for ara. There's no greater simcha by Hashem, elo sameach lev aniyim, to help the hearts of poor people. Yisomim, and people don't have parents, almanas, and widows, the geirim. Why sham sameach levum lolam ha'elu? If you help these downtrodden people, doma l'shchina, you become similar to God. Shenemar l'hachios ruach shvalim, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives life to those that are downtrodden. L'hachios lev nitkayim, and the ones that have difficulty, you give them life. So a simple reading of this halacha says it's better to help the poor than to have a fancier suitor. It's better to help the poor than to make your friends feel good with a nice salach manis. But the Rambam adds an extra word over here. The Rambam says, Mutav la'odam laharbais. It's better for a person to give more tzedakah on Purim. The word, the Rambam could just say, Mutav laharbais. It's better to give more tzedakah. If the thrust of the mitzvah of giving tzedakah was just to help the poor person, then the Rambam wouldn't say it's better for you to do it. It's an extra word. You could say mutav laharbais. You should be busier giving more to the poor people. Mutav la'adam means you, as a person, grow when you give of yourself to others. It's better for you because you become like your Hashem. When you give to a poor person, you're not just doing something better because you're helping him. You're helping yourself. That's part of the Benon Ma'atzmav saying is, my essence, my being, is here to be a giver, not a taker. As it happens, tonight is the 143rd yard site of the founder of the Muslim movement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He died 143 years ago. Tonight is his yard site. When the Rabbi Ruderman, the founder of our yeshiva, when he studied the yeshiva of Slabodka, by his Rebbe, the Altar of Slabodka. The Altar of Slabodka was a student of a student of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. His Rebbe was someone known, the Altar from Kelem. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was his Rebbe's Rebbe. And the Altar of Slabodka saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter twice in his life. And he made a profound impression on him, as he did on many people. And when the Altar of Slabodka made his yeshiva in Slabodka, the name of the yeshiva was Knesset Yisrael, to be named after Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. When Ruderman started our yeshiva in 1933, being a staunch Talmud of his Rebbe, who talked often and was a guiding light in his life, was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He gave the name Ner Yisrael to be named after Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, to follow in the same idea that his Rebbe did in having his yeshiva. So our yeshiva is named after Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, his students pointed out, Yahrzeit always comes in the Parsha of Mishpatim, this week coming up. And his students theorized that the reason why his Yahrzeit came in Mishpatim is because this is the Parsha that deals mostly with mitzvahs between man and man. And that because Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's mission in life was to show that the totality of a human being is not complete just by doing mitzvahs ben olam, makom mitzvahs between God and man. It has to be doing mitzvahs between God, between man and man. There was a fellow who was a businessman, and he went to Yisrael Salanter and he told him. And the fellow was a sheikhet. He was a sheikhet. And he was having a hard time making a living, and he found the responsibility of shechita to be a very great responsibility. Because to learn all the laws of shechita and to know how to do it right, if you don't move your hand exactly correctly, if you push it in too much, there's many, many laws. And if a sheikhet is not careful to make sure there's no nicks on the knife, you can make food treif. So this sheikhet didn't want the responsibility of being a slaughterer, so he said, I want to give it up. I'm just afraid that maybe I'm going to hurt other Jews by not producing kosher meat. So Saul Santos said, so what are you going to do? He says, I'll go into business. He says, business? Do you know how careful we have to be not to hurt another Jew in business, and how many more transgressions there could be in business? You're better off being a shochet. You're a shochet, you have to worry about making sure the food is kosher. If you're in business, you got to make sure that everything you do is honest according to the highest levels of the Torah. This is a typical response of Rabbi Saul Salanter talking about this aspect of the importance of Benal Mechavero, this same idea of Purim is connected with Benal Mechavero, right? With this Matan Savionim. The Purim is connected with a person, his own self-growth. Saul Salanter died in a hospital in Königsberg, Germany. And he understood that he was about to pass away. And he saw that the student that was there helping him was afraid to be there at the time of death. He had never seen a dead person. So Saul Salanter started talking to this student about, you know, sometimes, as if it had nothing to do with him. Sometimes people die and people find it difficult. It's no different than somebody sleeping, no big deal. And it was only hours after he passed away that the student understood that Rabbi Yisrael was being sensitive to his student, because he so knew that the student was afraid to be there when he died. And he didn't even get it at the time, he only realized afterwards. So Rabbi Saul Salanter spend the last moments of his life not saying Shema, but worrying about how his student was going to react to him. And the idea is, if you live a lifetime worrying about others, you can die in that way too. His student, the Altman Sabbatis Rebbe, the Altman Kelem, died in 1888. In 1888, gefilte fish happened to have a lot of bones in it. It wasn't like today. And he died on a Friday morning. And right before he died, listen to how these people who were so sensitive to other people's feelings. It was Friday morning. He knew it was his last moments in this world. And he turned to his family and he said, listen, first of all, I know I'm leaving this world. When it comes to Shabbos, you don't cry. Shabbos. And second of all, he said, if you do cry when you eat the fish, a bone can get stuck in your throat. So be careful. So he was thinking at a moment of personal challenge where he's leaving this world, and he was focused on how his family would be on Shabbos with the fish. These are people, this is when the person himself uplifts himself, that only through learning Torah can do, when the person becomes an exalted human being of where he cares about others in such a deep way that he can actually decompartmentalize and not only think about the fact that he's leaving this world, but think about the fact that how are they going to react? Shabbos, you don't cry. Shabbos, watch out for the bones. These are how these exalted people lived. This was the message of their movement of self-perfection. In fact, one of the students of the Altman Slabodka, who spoke in Slabodka once, this is recorded, said a very fascinating thing. He said, "V'yohavta orecha kamocha, loving your neighbor like yourself, is considered a major rule of the Torah." The Medrash says, "Zeh kol gadol b'Torah." It's a general rule for the entire Torah. So the question is like this. I understand if you're sensitive to your fellow Jew, so in business you'll be sensitive, when you're sitting and talking you'll be sensitive, you won't hurt people's feelings. Kol gadol b'Torah means it helps you for everything. It helps you when you want to go into a restaurant, you don't know if it's kosher or not, or if it's a good heksher, then you say, "Yeah, I'll go." No, 1 second, how do you know it's kosher? Right? How does it help you not wear a suit that's shatness? How does it help for all the mitzvahs that are between God and man just because you're sensitive to another human being? And there's a lot of answers to this question. But one of these Musar movement students said the following observation, which is true as well. When we are born as children, after Adam and Eve sinned, we are born selfish. Not in a bad way. When a baby cries, they need food. That's the only way to express themselves. They're worried about themselves. No one ever sat there with a one-day-old baby that's crying and saying, "Why are you, I'm busy now, what are you crying for?" Right? That's silly, because the kid knows he needs food, and Hashem made the kid and gave him the ability to cry in order to I need it, which is true. As our kids get older, right, it's our job to make them be, they have to take care of their own needs. They do have needs that are legitimate, but if they're self-focused only on their own needs, they're not going to grow to be Torah-like Jews. Where a Torah-like Jew is someone who takes care of his needs, but at the same time is thinking about others. So the challenge of parenting and raising children is to take care of their needs and at the same time give them a sense of importance about caring and giving for others and not being self-absorbed. So when you have a mitzvah like V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that says love your neighbor like yourself, think of what he needs. Be consumed with somebody else's problems. Don't just be focused on yourself. When the person becomes less selfish and more selfless, then when God commands him that you want to be able to read at night on Shabbos, but you know you're not allowed to turn on the light. Big deal if I turn on the light. It's no big deal. Hashem says not to do it. If the person is, the way society is today, self-focused, so then anything you can't get, you find as difficult. If you're busy giving to other people and you realize life is not about yourself, so then you can have a test about turning on a light or not, but you can win it. You can have a test about going in to eat food in a place where you're not sure if the extra is good, but you can win it. You can see a suit that may have shotness in it and maybe you shouldn't try it on, but you want to do it because you like the suit. But if you train yourself that life is not just about yourself, that's why you have to orecha kamocha. It's a kol gadol b'Torah. That's why it's a rule for the whole Torah, because when you care about others, that develops within you a sense of life is not just about ourselves. And that is the message of Purim as well. Mordechai went, and Haman wanted to be treated as a god, and Mordechai said, "You can't do that." Mordechai was against the Jews partying with the Goyim, and he stood his ground. And Mordechai was a sensitive soul as well. a simple example, you read the Megillah every year, you may not realize this, but the Sfas points out something startling. The dark side of the Purim story is that Esther got stuck being in the palace. For a Jewish girl, you have to live with Achashverosh and be there. It was the dark side of the miracle, right? She was not comfortable there, right? But she understood that was God's providence, that her being there was for a purpose. And when she was selected, she realized who came. But being the tzaddik as she was, right, she was uncomfortable. Right? So what did Mordechai do? What does it say in the Megillah? B'chol yom v'yom, Mordechai mishalich, chatzar beis hamelech, lirois yishlem Esther Amalka. Every single day, Mordechai came to see how Esther's doing. Now, why does the Megillah have to tell us that? And why did he do it? Right? If he checked on her once a week or twice a week, would that not be sufficient? But checking on her daily said, I feel for you. You don't belong there. You don't like it there. You have to be there. So on a daily basis, I'm coming to check in. So you think when he came on a Monday and he asked her how it was going, and Tuesday it was any different, and Wednesday is any different? She's among the same goyis and the same, not living among the Jews and having to go to Achashverosh when he wanted her. It was uncomfortable. So why do you go every day? So Sfas says, part of why Hashem made the Nes is because look at the sensitivity that he had. Every word in the Megillah makes a difference. What was his sensitivity? That every day he felt for her. Didn't skip. He always cared about her. Right? That's selflessness at the highest level. And that's why we can grow from when we read the Megillah and look at the story of how the Jews got together and how they became one in realizing the mistakes that they made. In fact, Rav Ruderman used to say that, you know, next Sunday, and Monday really, is the first day of Adar. Mishenichnas Adar Marv B'Simcha. When Adar comes, is a time for happiness. So Rav Ruderman used to say, like, why is Adar more happy than any other holiday? Because this was a holiday where the Jews earned it from their own hard work. We got out of Mitzrayim, the Jews still worship Yahweh the Zorah. That was an eschus of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But why did the Jews merit the whole miracle of Purim? Because it was their accomplishment. They all did a collective tshuva together, ba'achdus, as one. So it was their own accomplishment. Happiness comes when a person does his own accomplishments. Happiness is, you give, it's hard to give. There's a story with Rav Chatzko Abramsky. He's a great gadol. He lived in England before he moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he used to go into a factory of a man that owned the factory, a firm Jew. And he used to go once a month and ask them for money to support some kolo fellows that he was helping out in Israel. And he was the head of the Bezdin in London. It was a big Talmid Chacham. So he used to come to this man. The man said, sure, I'll give you a check. And every month he gave him a check. And he supported these fellows. So one month, the man said to Chasko Bramsky, I want to ask you a question. The Gemara says that if you cause somebody else to do a mitzvah, you get more reward than the person that did the mitzvah. So I work hard in my factory all week. I make good money. You come in once a month, ask for a check, and you get more reward than me. Why is that fair? Good question. Abramsky is a very smart man. So he said, I want to ask you a question. But be honest with me. you write that check, he said, as your heart skip a beat. Be honest. So the man said, yes. He says, when I ask you for the money, my heart skips two beats. So therefore, you get more reward. Whatever comes with a little more hard work, Hashem puts that into the mix. Mordechai went daily. It was boring. What is, how are you doing, Esther? He went every day. He was sensitive day in, day out. The Rabbi Saul Salanter's students used to say the following statement in Yiddish, and I'll tell you the English, but it's terrific. Says, Klein mentioned to an Amo Grace Zachen, and Grace mentioned to an Asachmo Klein Zachen. Small people do sometimes big things. Big people always do small things. Today we look at life and say somebody did something spectacular, they get credit. But the day-to-day, the phone call to that needy person, how you doing? Small things on a daily basis that go under the radar, that aren't recognized at dinners, that aren't talked about. But Mordechai went every day to check on Esther. Big people do small things. Small people do sometimes big things. But it's consistency, doing, caring about others on a consistent basis, quietly, without fanfare, and thinking of others and being beyond ourselves. That's the hallmark of what a Jew is. And that's what Purim is about. Purim is develop ourselves, be proud of who we are. The happiness we have in Purim is all these things come together. We see God's hand in life, and we see how man helping man helps, and how a person, when he helps others, helps himself to grow. That's our goal. And that's what people taking off time. It's President's Day. People, you could be sitting and doing other things. You're coming to a Makom Torah to learn. It's a big thing. And turn that into daily living life to its fullest by focusing on serving God, serving man, and building ourselves to believe in ourselves that we can be bigger and better people through working hard on a constant basis. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Sure. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I'll take any questions as long as I can know the answer. If there's no questions, I can handle that too.
I have a short one. The sensitivity that you mentioned, the Bein Adam Chaveru and all that, I know there's a difference, but how far does that extend into non-Jews, for people that work and live in the world of non-Jews?
It extends. It does extend. There is a picture of one of the great Bali Musar, Bali Apian, feeding milk to a cat. Why was he doing that? Because it says, V'racham avo komas, if Hashem has achmonis on all of his creations. So if you feed a cat, you're doing something special. If your mailman, who's not Jewish, comes to you and tells you that his dog was run over, and you commiserate with him, even if you're not, you know, an animal lover necessarily, but you commiserate with him. That showing a care of another human being is part of the mitzvah of halakha v'drach of caring for people too. Caring and dealing nicely with non-Jews is a function that the Torah recognizes as part of the mitzvah of being sensitive to people, like Hashem is sensitive to people. When sometimes they have over here, like on the corner by the Beltway, they have these people collecting money for animal rights. For animal rights. And also they have these people collecting coins. So sometimes if I'm by a red light, right, and they come and ask me, so I will say to them, aren't there human beings that need to be helped also? Like, why are you first worried about animal rights? Now, what's wrong with helping poor people? Right? Besides which, I think some of these organizations, all they're doing is helping some guy in Madison Avenue enjoy his office. But that's not the point. In other words, there are many things that people could be involved in. Right? The Torah value is that we have to take care of our own first. But we do have to be sensitive to others as well. And that is part of, not Haftarecha Kamecha. Haftarecha Kamecha is for Jews. Halachta Bedrachav, being sensitive to other people because they are God's creations, is true for non-Jews as well. And there are many situations where you could do that mitzvah by being sensitive to non-Jews as well. And that's keeping with and making yourself a better person, more similar to God in that way. But that doesn't mean that that should be our focus, right? Our focus still has to be, our focus has to be for our people. But caring for others and showing their concern and making yourself God-like in that way is certainly part and parcel of what a person could be doing in life, should be doing.
Isn't that part of being a light unto the nations?
Sure. But it's more than that. It's making yourself God-like. Because God takes care of everybody. I mean, you see that you're not allowed to eat a meal until you feed your animals. Mm-hmm. So the Torah is sensitive to animals, and the Torah is certainly sensitive to Goyim and to non-Jews. And the Torah is sensitive. There's even a higher sensitivity to our own. But there's a sensitivity there too, because you have to be God-like. Yes.
To what extent, meaning when you're doing those acts of kindness and reaching out and being, you know, selfless, there's always that feel good, that, you know, that you feel good about yourself, that you're doing it for yourself. There's that side to it.
Right.
So how do you, is it supposed to be, is it okay? Should you not?
Well, let's put it this way. The Gemara says, Mito shelo lishmo bo lishmo, when you do things for non-altruistic motives, from doing enough of that, you end up doing it for pure reasons as well. So will you feel good to help somebody else? Yes. Is the goal on the highest level just because you want to be good in essence, not just to feel good? Yes. But as Rav Chaim Volozhin points out, you can't jump to be altruistic right away. Just give. Give and give and give. And through giving, ultimately, you can come to being really selfless, not just for the sake of feeling good. That's a hard thing to reach, but it doesn't come from being selfish.
How do
it comes
you know
from
when
being
you're
selfless,
there?
Huh?
How do you know when you're there?
Well, I don't know. When you get there, tell me. Yes.
A lot of times I get confronted, forgive me, Stucca, to non-Jews. They literally come up to you and ask you for money. How do you balance that when you should really be giving your Stucca to Jewish-only and Jewish organizations? I mean, is there an element of giving stucca to non-Jews, especially when they confront you personally? And how do you handle those types of situations?
Well, no. The exact accounting of percentages, etc., is not something that I can answer. And that's individual in everybody's personal situation. But the difference is that one is that you have to be God-like and caring. Right? By Yidden, the idea is, you know, is that you have to take care of his needs. And when you're helping the non-Jew, you're being God-like, but it's not because I'm primarily responsible for that person. When it's a Jew, you're primarily responsible for him. So it's like a triage. You have to know your situation. It has to do with how much he's going to create more shalom, how much are you showing pity on somebody else. These are highly individualistic questions, and each situation, person's business contacts, how he's seen in the community, so many factors that you cannot give a one-size-fits-all answer to such an intricate question. But, you know, these types of questions, I like to say that anybody who's figured out exactly how to do it and the right balance is doing something wrong, because it's not an easy thing to figure out.
Right.
But it should be done, yes.
But giving to non-Jewish institutions, which you can certainly do, doesn't count toward Meiser, I believe.
That's correct. Okay. Meiser it's not, but Valachta Bedrochov it is. Right. Yes?
So going back to the, when you stopped at the red light and someone comes over to you about animal things, what about all the people that come over to you at stoplights for them or for other poor people? So and I, on one hand, you know, if I have, sometimes I want to just give because I don't kechel Hashem, same type of idea, like, you see a Jewish person and then...
I hate to be a cynic, but a lot of times I think
right.
that what you're doing by giving to those people is just helping them either get cigarettes or drugs.
Right.
In other words, I think a lot of those people, you're not helping them by giving them money. They should, in other words, that, a lot of those people are sick, and you're just feeding into their sickness. So I don't see that as pity, personally.
What I've done before, say, why don't you come on, I'll take you to McDonald's or something, get you a meal, seriously. And then a lot of times they'll go, no, that, no thanks.
I
hear
that too.
Really?
It's clear, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, I'm not convinced that there's a real homeless problem. I think most of the people that are homeless are, is part of a, you know, they have some kind of emotional instability that they feel good being in that ridiculous position. I'm not saying it can't happen, but that's my sense. My sense is that it's more of a sickness than out of lack of money. But I haven't studied enough to save with the clarity.
Question. So this underlying theme of Ahavta L'Rechem Kamocha and Adam and Adam, is that why we learn to be Mekabel HaTorah Be'Achav exactly from Purim? Because Adam Be'Adam leads to Adam Be'Machav?
Absolutely, yes. You took away part of my drasha. 100%. Because the Jews got together, but just like Bad Matan Torah, when the Jews got together, Hashem gave the Torah. Here, when the Jews got together, there was another giving of the Torah because the Torah is only effective when there's unity. That's the way it was designed.
As a community, taking it a little further to like the national level, should the Jewish community, what should the Jewish community's approach be towards like the refugees from Syria or like people suffering on a more national level?
I'm not a State Department specialist and I didn't vote for anybody in this election because I didn't find anybody that appealing personally, but I don't know enough to know, you know, how many of these refugees, I mean, what goes on there, when I think about just, imagine being the head of a country, like in Syria, and you know that because you want to stay in power, 500,000 people died. I mean, to me, it is just so horrific that people can be so selfish and so rotten, you know, just to stay in power, they can do such things. I can't relate to it in any way. Like, you know, it costs another human being to suffer and to die for, you know, for their power. It's, you know, the evil of man is very troublesome to me personally. So, on the one hand, you can feel for these refugees. On the other hand, how do you know how many of them? I'm not a Trump supporter, but how do you know that he may be right? Maybe some of them are dangerous people. I don't know. It's a complex issue. I don't know enough to say. I don't think that's where our priorities should be anyhow. I think that we have enough priorities within our own community that we have to take care of first. And the rest is like a very complex because of a lot of selfish people that don't care about the people in their countries. So I'm not sure that I have a full handle on it. No, I'm not a State Department lackey.
Okay, so we'll go learn.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can smile that much.
Back to this manager now?
Yeah.
see if we can talk to Shaggy for a second.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Like, I know there's,